Unlike the princes in his court, Zedekiah sensed that Jeremiah spoke the truth, but he could not bring himself to oppose those that surrounded him, perhaps because he was unable to see a reality beyond the immediate moment, so certain that any purported weakness on his end would lead to his being deposed or killed. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 28, The Lessons of the Life of Zedekiah. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. What is Churchill's greatest speech? A case is to be made for his famous post-Dunkirk address in the Commons, which rallied Britain to battle, alone against the Nazis. We shall go on to the end, we shall fight in France, we shall fight on the seas and oceans, we shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, we shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills, we shall never surrender. Andrew Roberts rightly calls it, quote, a speech which ranks alongside those of Pericles and Abraham Lincoln as one of the greatest addresses in history, end quote. But that speech, as important as it was a rallying cry to ultimate victory, maybe the most eloquent ever. Thus Roberts adds that, quote, Churchill's post-war bodyguard, Ron Golding, who was an RAF squadron leader in 1940, recalled, after those speeches, we wanted the Germans to come, end quote. But it is possible that even more admirable is Churchill's speech after Munich, his protest against Chamberlain. Churchill said, I do not grudge our loyal, brave people who were ready to do their duty no matter what the cost, who never flinched under the strain of last week. I do not grudge them the natural, spontaneous outburst of joy and relief when they learned that the hard ordeal would no longer be required of them at the moment, but they should know the truth. They should know that there has been gross neglect and deficiency in our defenses. They should know that we have sustained a defeat without a war, the consequences of which will travel far with us along our road. They should know that we have passed an awful milestone in our history, when the whole equilibrium of Europe has been deranged, and that the terrible words have for the time being been pronounced against the Western democracies. Thou art weighed in the balance and found wanting. So Churchill said, describing a disaster yet to come to a city that had convinced itself that no disaster was coming. To say this to an England desperate to believe Chamberlain, this is extraordinary. It is a profoundly difficult thing to tell people what they do not want to hear. And it is in this moment, as Robert writes, that Churchill showed, quote, the greatest moral courage of his life, end quote. Telling unpleasant truths is an embodiment of leadership. Unfortunately, Jerusalem's ruler in 586 BCE did not have this capacity. And as we remember the last Davidic king of Jerusalem, we ponder his lack of religious insight and courage. We realize what political greatness is and why Jerusalem, lacking it, ultimately fell. As we left off in our last presentation, Jerusalem's king Jehoiakim ignores Jeremiah's warnings, burning the scroll that the prophet has sent to him. As described in Chronicles, the ascending power in the region captures Jerusalem and takes Jehoiakim captive. Soon after, his son, Jehoiachin or Jechonia is taken as well, along with all the elite of Jerusalem. Babylon's king Nebuchadnezzar installed Jechonia's uncle, renamed Tzidkiyahu Zedekiah, as a puppet ruler. But Zedekiah rebels against Babylon, and Jerusalem is besieged. A starving city still refuses to believe that Babel could truly destroy the temple. In every crisis in the past, Jerusalem had been saved. But Jeremiah continues his terrible task, saying to Jerusalem in chapter 38 of his book, Thus saith the Lord, this city shall surely be given into the hand of the king of Babylon's army, which shall take it. The ministers or princes of the city see this as a threat to national security and complain to Zedekiah about the prophet. Therefore the princes said unto the king, We beseech thee, let this man be put to death, for thus he weakens the hands of the men of war that remain in this city. Zedekiah agrees, saying, Behold, he is in your hand, for the king is not he that can do anything against you. Note, ladies and gentlemen, the weakness implied in the way that the king gives in to his counselors, the princes of Jerusalem. Jeremiah is cast into a dungeon until an Ethiopian servant of the king begs that the prophet be let out. The monarch asks to see Jeremiah. As we read the description of this encounter, it seems that Zedekiah is not unsympathetic to Jeremiah's plight and plea, for it is suddenly revealed that the last Davidic ruler of Jerusalem wishes to hear all that God has told the prophet. Then Jeremiah said unto Zedekiah, If I declare it unto thee, wilt thou not surely put me to death? And if I give thee counsel, wilt thou not hearken unto me? So Zedekiah the king swore secretly unto Jeremiah, saying, As the Lord liveth, that made us this soul, I will not put thee to death, neither will I give thee unto the hand of these men that seek thy life. Then said Jeremiah unto Zedekiah, Thus saith the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, If thou wilt assuredly go forth unto the king of Babylon's princes, then thy soul shall live, and this city shall not be burned with fire, and thou shalt live in thine house. But if thou wilt not go forth to the king of Babylon's princes, then shall the city be given into the hands of the Chaldeans, and they shall burn it with fire, and thou shalt not escape out of their hand. Thus Jeremiah asked the king to cease his rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar. If you listen to me, Jeremiah says, Jerusalem will not be destroyed. Unlike his predecessor Jehoiakim, who burned Jeremiah's prophecies, the current monarch reacts differently. He does not reject Jeremiah's words, but he still cannot bring himself to join Jeremiah in declaring the unpleasant truth to his counselors. And Zedekiah the king said unto Jeremiah, I am afraid of the Jews that are fallen to the Chaldeans, lest they deliver me into their hand, and they mock me. But Jeremiah said, They shall not deliver thee. Obey, I beseech thee, the voice of the Lord which I speak unto thee. So it shall be well unto thee, and thy soul shall live. Zedekiah emerges as much less wicked than Jehoiakim, but in a certain sense, more troubling and tragic, precisely because he does not deny the prophet's words. Therefore, his cowardice is so dismaying. This is the defining moment in Zedekiah's life, and he fails. In his book, Leadership, Henry Kissinger reflects on the modern leaders he admires, and he writes as follows, quote, All were known for their directness and often tellers of hard truths. They did not entrust the fate of their countries to poll-tested, focus-grouped rhetoric, end quote. Whether or not one agrees with every description of the leaders discussed in Kissinger's book, these sentences aptly and eloquently capture an essence of leadership itself. As modern commentators on the book of Jeremiah note, Zedekiah is not evil. He is weak. He cannot overcome the pressure of the princes, and he worries that if he sides with Jeremiah, it would be he that would be handed over to Babel to die. He therefore takes the position that only weakness and waffling can explain. He treats Jeremiah with reverence, but he still begs him not to tell the princes in his court how sympathetically he has been treated. Then said Zedekiah unto Jeremiah, Let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. Jeremiah is told by Zedekiah to claim that in his meeting with the king, he was merely asking for mercy. He should not inform them that the king was willing to hear him out. And as we ponder the end of Zedekiah, we can go back to the beloved image of Jeremiah by Rembrandt. The prophet dominates the main scene, but on the left of the larger canvas, we see, in miniature, an entirely other image unfolding. A city with a dome in flames, with an army bearing spears surrounding it. This is Babel's army surrounding Jerusalem. And if we focus carefully, we will also see a man who seems to be turning away from the city with his hands over his eyes. Who is that? Why would Rembrandt choose to play such a scene in the painting? One suggestion prominent today is that this is Zedekiah running away from Jerusalem as it is destroyed, a scene inspired by Jeremiah's description of what comes. So the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah, and in the fourth month and the ninth day of the month, the famine was sore in the city so that there was no bread for the people of the land. Then the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled, and went forth out of the city by night by way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden. The Chaldeans were by the city round about, and they went by the way of the plain. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king, and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered before him. Then they took the king and carried him up to the king of Babylon to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. And the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He slew also all the princes of Judah in Riblah. Then he put out the eyes of Zedekiah, and the king of Babylon bound him in chains and carried him to Babylon and put him in prison till the day of his death. Thus the Davidic dynasty ceases to reign from Jerusalem, its monarchy not yet restored till this day. And if this is an image of Zedekiah by Rembrandt, though we will later offer other possibilities, it may be because one of the artist's great interests was the nature of sight and foresight, And if Rembrandt places Zedekiah in the image, it is because he takes Zedekiah's blindness as a metaphor for his lack of foresight, a lack of foresight that occurred even before the king was physically maimed by Babel. The depiction of the king, fleeing with his hands over his eyes, reflects perhaps for Rembrandt his inability to see the way that Jeremiah wished for him to see. Unlike the princes in his court, Zedekiah sensed that Jeremiah spoke the truth, but he could not bring himself to oppose those that surrounded him, perhaps because he was unable to see a reality beyond the immediate moment, so certain that any purported weakness on his end would lead to his being deposed or killed. Jeremiah asked Zedekiah to imagine a different reality, one with Jerusalem being briefly under Babylon's yoke, but still enduring, with the king and his dynasty surviving. But Zedekiah just couldn't bring himself to see it. Kissinger further argues in his book that in some of the most successful leaders, a religious perspective, quote, helped to instill self-mastery and a preference for taking the long view, which Kissinger further describes as two essential attributes of statesmanship, end quote. Zedekiah could not see past his panicked moment, though faith asked of him to think differently. In an interesting footnote, Kissinger cites Tocqueville, who reflected that devout leaders often use their faith as a source of success because they are accustomed, quote, to consider for a long succession of years an unmoving object toward which they constantly advance, and they learn by insensible progressions to repress a thousand little passing desires. And Tocqueville adds, this explains why religious people have often accomplished such lasting things. In occupying themselves with the other world, they encountered the great secret of succeeding in this one. End quote. In this, Zedekiah fails. But as Jerusalem falls, Jeremiah teaches all of us to see far into the future. And that is why he is the leader of 586 BCE Jerusalem that we remember forever. This is Mayor Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.